Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. At the end of the year, Mike Keller is stepping down as executive director of Independence Center, a community-based rehabilitation program for adults with severe and persistent mental illnesses here in the St. Louis area. It serves more than 1,500 individuals each year and operates a little differently than most programs dealing with people who have mental health issues. And there are a lot of Americans who do, well over 40 million. Mike Keller joins me in studio along with Chris Hampel. He has been a member of Independence Center for a year and a half. Thank you both for being with us. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Mike, good to see you again. It's been a couple of years, but welcome back. Well, your time is winding down, but you still have a few months to go, Mike.
I do. I do. And the search is proving productive, and I think they're soon going to have my successor identified. So I'm happy to turn over the reins and yet maintain continued involvement in the field of mental health.
You will continue, yes, to do that. Well, that's good. You know, you've called this this whole process a personal mission, and you also say in your goodbye letter to everyone that you've been so pleased to be working with heroes. Explain both of those for me: the personal mission and the heroes part.
Well, I have really, really been deeply affected by coming to understand how widespread mental health issues are, that virtually every family somewhere on not too distant on the family tree, there is that person who we may think of as not having a mental health problem, but they probably do. And they may be masking it with an addiction of one form or another. So that's very deep to me. And then I would say that the heroism of our members who show up every day and do what they need to do to take care of themselves, that's not easy. It's not easy sometimes for them to get out of bed and get moving. And so we give an atmosphere, we provide an atmosphere where they know they are needed, wanted, and expected, and that when they show up at the clubhouse, there is adult work going on.
We'll explain the clubhouse in just a moment and why we're calling Chris here a member as opposed to a client. But Chris, address what Mike just said there with regard to the operation and your role in it.
Well, it's important that what he said is top of the list, because being part of something bigger than what you can be at home is what the Independence Center is, and everything that it is involved with it and it does for you or for us. I become speechless at times when people ask me, well, what all does the center do? It's like, it's more of what doesn't, you know, that's very small list of things that, you know, it doesn't do, only because that they're doing so much in other areas.
Well, I'll turn it back to Mike then and say we ought to tell folks exactly what the center does do and how it's different from other organizations.
Well, let me start with the concept of membership.
Yeah.
Because we don't have clients, we don't have patients, we have members. And there are people who hear that the first time and they go, oh, that's cute. You know, they don't call them patients, but that's what they are. No. Membership is a very different concept because it says I belong. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many of our members over the years have told me that, well, I knew my family loved me and they cared about me and they wanted only the best for me and they were there for me. But don't think for a minute that made me feel like I belonged in that family. I always felt like I was the one who was half a bubble off, and everybody else got it and I didn't. Or the gatherings where everybody felt like, wow, we're family, made me terribly anxious. So to belong in the clubhouse is no small thing, and that's what membership is about.
Chris, is he talking about you when he talks about that togetherness, that family kind of thing?
Exactly. I mean, when you walk in, when I first started, I was a little hesitant. I mean, just starting out, getting, you know, a new experience. But since then, it's just like, it feels like I'm coming home. It really does.
Are you there every day?
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. I work a part-time job during the morning, for which the center has helped me get. And then I come to the center afterwards and spend my afternoons there.
Mike, what is the clubhouse? We've referenced it a couple of times now, that to which the members belong.
Okay. The concept is that all of us as human beings, whether we're sick or well, we need to know when our eyes blink open in the morning that there's somewhere where we're needed, mm-hmm. you know. And so we provide just an atmosphere where we need member energy to run the place. We don't staff in a way that everything will get done by staff energy. Instead, we need your help, Chris. We need, you know, we need your involvement. And so everybody feels like they can be part of it. And I love it. We often have visitors who come in, take a tour at 11:30 and then stay for lunch. And I love that because we were able to make the point that, well, if you enjoyed your lunch today, think about this. That menu wouldn't have been planned without member involvement. The food order wouldn't have been phoned in when it got there in the loading dock. It wouldn't get up to the kitchen, you know, if it weren't for member and energy. And the busing, the cashiering, everything is engages members. So we may serve 100 lunches every day, but that's that many more ways in which we can have members involved in something outside of themselves.
What specifically are you doing for the members to help them deal with whatever issues they have?
We're providing all kinds of wraparound supports. Chris has mentioned employment, education. We try to get people into education programs in the community. We're not trying to run our own education program, but our own GED course, but to do that using community resources. We are able to connect them with psychiatric services, although that's not done in the clubhouse, because it is a philosophy of the clubhouse that this must be a place where I do for myself and my fellow members. Things are not done to me in a clubhouse setting. That's very important. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the members are so involved in not only just what Mike mentioned about the meals and the day-to-day, you know, work, but we're also involved in sitting in with interviews of potential new employees, new social workers coming in. We sit in on those meetings. You know, there's members that sit on the executive board. You know, so, I mean, we're involved in everything from top to bottom.
If I may ask, what issues brought you to the Independent Center?
I've had depression for about 30 years now. I was diagnosed when I was in my 20s, and it was some major life changes that happened about midlife. Went through a divorce. I was a carpenter. I was a carpenter for 30 years. I had kind of branched out on my own started my own company, trying to do that. And then from there, you know, I had a divorce, and then everything kind of tumbled from there. Financial problems, and, you know, and then the depression just hit me, you know, really hard.
How did you find out about Independent Center?
It was kind of a long process, but I keep thinking in my mind, is like, I wish I could have found this way sooner than what I did. But everything, you know, as everybody says, everything happens for a reason. And when I did get connected, everything just kind of clicked right in, you know. And from day one, it's like I'm a part of something better and bigger. Yeah.
Mike, is this a typical story?
Yes, it is. I would say for many people, it happens much younger in their life and career, their family life, than it did for Chris. But typically, the onset of the major and persistent mental illnesses that we're talking about is between 18 and 24. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, you can experience it at 18 or 24 and then have it really become a bigger issue in your life at a later point. But we often hear it, the people say, I was sleeping in my parents' basement and watching TV all day and for the last 3 years until I found that it was a place that I could come and belong and feel like other people knew what it was to live in my skin.
Is depression the issue with which most of your members come to you?
I would say the largest segment is bipolar disorder, but we also have a large population of people who are dealing with schizophrenia, major depression, and schizoaffective disorder, which is sort of all of the above, mm-hmm. you know, in a unique combination.
What sort of staff do you have?
We have a total staff of about 120, but that includes people who work in our clinical setting as well as the clubhouse, and it also includes community support workers who are helping people who are clubhouse members but are unable to come into the clubhouse maybe because of their living situation at mm-hmm. the time, and so we're out checking on them and helping them with shopping. Property maintenance, just all the kinds of things that they need to keep to remain in the community and to remain as productive as they can be.
When people leave the independent center, are they in a category you would call recovered or just better able to cope with the world around them?
They're better able to cope. Not that there is not such a thing as recovery from mental illness, because there
sure.
is. But basically, the people we deal with, this is going to be an element to their life. This is not like a postpartum depression that they'll get over at some point or a midlife crisis. These are heavier diagnoses, and it's not all going to go away. So we like to think of ourselves as a launching pad for people to get back into the mainstream of the world of work and productivity. But we're also a touchstone that if somebody is doing well for a time and is able to not need our services so much and doesn't need to be coming into the clubhouse, that they know they always can. We're kind of like Israel. There's the right of return, you know. So you know that if you're once a member, you're always a member. And I have the right to come back if I need it.
Do you turn people away?
No, we really don't. We do need to know that we are the right location for that person. So sometimes we have people who come to us where they've got multiple things going on, and the other issues may actually be larger than their what we call an Axis One diagnosis, which are those I named already. Hmm. And if that's the case, then we will try to refer and connect them with those services through another agency. But basically, if you have the diagnosis and we can find a funding source for you, and we're pretty good at that, then we
find a funding source for what? Just to support
the participation in the program,
right,
but.
Right.
We're a little unusual in that of the major community-based agencies that deal with people like that are similar to our population. We raise a lot of private money, mm-hmm. and so that helps us extend our program to some people that until we can get them maybe some governmental support through Medicaid or mm-hmm. another program.
Chris, how are you different today than you were 15 months ago? And just how do you feel different? How do you react differently? How are you different?
I am different in the way that I feel I have something to fall back on. My family was kind of, we've had our issues through the years. My parents passed away. So after my mom died, you know, things weren't all that great. You know, we weren't really so much a perfectly tight family. I did have my oldest sister stand behind me when I was in and out of the hospital. But when I was, you know, after I came out of the hospital, I was homeless, you know, going through the whole thing. And being and finding and being part of the Independence Center and growing, I feel like I've grown, and then I've also kind of explored new avenues that I would have never been able to have.
We hear so much about the stigma associated with mental illness. Address that for me, Chris, if you would. Have you run into that? And sometimes that starts right at home, right in the household.
It does. When I was a kid, depression really wasn't even thought of or talked about. I always knew that I felt different. I was bullied when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. As time went on, it's kind of like let me put it this way. As I got into – when I graduated high school, I got in construction. And an 18-year-old kid going into the construction field is a wide-opening new world that you don't always get. And when I explained to friends after being in it so many years that, yeah, you know, I feel depressed or I have depression, they're like, no, you don't, you know. And it's like, yes, I do, you know, because beyond this exterior, you know, I may look like I'm big and strong and whatever, but inside, you know, it's kind of a jumbled mess.
Mm-hmm. And when people do learn that you have depression and, quote, I don't like to use the term mental illness, by the way, for everything because I think that's part of the stigma. People think that that's way over the top somehow.
Well, that's because the emphasis is all on mental and not on the fact that it is
an
illness.
Yeah.
You know, and I always say I'm old enough and ugly enough to remember when my mother's friends in the 1950s would talk about one of the women who had it, and they were afraid to say the word breast cancer. The word cancer, you were opening yourself up to having it.
There was a stigma there as well. If you had cancer, something was really
wrong.
Oh,
yeah. It was a terrible stigma. But, you know, we got rid of that. And then we went through the whole thing with HIV and AIDS. And now we can talk about that. The stigma of mental illness is the one that is the most persistent. And despite the fact that we're told that one in four American families is dealing with mental health issues at any time, but it's just not talked about, and that's wrong. We need to open up that conversation.
Chris, and those people that you talked to, your fellow construction workers or what have you, and we told them that you were depressed or having a depression. How did they react to you?
Oh, you're just having a bad day. They blew it off. They wrote it off, and it's just like, no, you know, like I said, they see this, you know, this big kid or, you know, big guy. It's like, no, you don't have depression. You're having a bad day or something. It's like, no, I'm different. And it's hard for me to explain to them what is really going on inside.
What is the benefit to you of going to a place, the clubhouse, if you will, on a regular basis and interacting with people who are basically in the same boat?
Feeling that I'm not the only one.
That's helpful.
Yes, absolutely. When I feel, because like I said, there was a lot of the stigma that I had from the construction field, you know, no, you're not this, you're not that. And everybody's like, you know, but when you come to the center, it's like we all have some kind of problem. We all have some kind of an illness or something, and we're all here for each other. And going there on a daily basis, you get to know everybody, and everybody gets to know you. And it's an incredible feeling when you can walk in and you're thinking all this other stuff in your mind of what's going on, and the other members will see, okay, Chris, there's something wrong. You know, you can see it in your face. I said, really? You know, because it's like I try not to show it, you know, but they're, you know, we can see each other.
They get to know you so well that they can see that sort of
Absolutely.
Thing. Absolutely. Mike, I have to feel that this is actually very therapeutic, having that association with other people who have issues that they're dealing with.
Absolutely. We're not alone. You know, that's that none of us wants a life alone. And yet this is an isolating illness. So I think the fact that you come to know other people who are dealing with your demons, that know that what the novelist William Styron called the big black dog that comes in and sits on your shoulders, you know, puts his paws up on your shoulders and pushes you down. What an image. But to know that you're not alone in that, that other people know what it is to have that feeling, which is not well understood.
What is the Connect team? I know that you've got the clubhouse and also I see Connect teams. What is that?
The Connect team is an affirmative effort that like goes out and tries to connect with people when they are hospitalized and get them out of a hospital setting and into community treatment. So this is a program that we've started under with some state backing that really tries to get people out of more expensive and less appropriate treatments. You know, we all need hospital emergency rooms, and they should be for really emergency situations.
This is run through the Independence Center, but I'm gathering from what you're saying, not necessarily to have those people become a part of the center, a part of your operation.
Well, we'd like that where it's feasible, but above all, we want to start with them where they are, you know, and then if they can come into our program, into the clubhouse program, that's ideal. But the main thing is to keep people from cycling over and over into emergency situations at a much higher dollar cost, and a lot of that cost is borne by the state, therefore by the taxpayers. So it's just a much more efficient and effective program to get people into community-based treatment.
And you're not opposed to taking donations, I'm sure, from the public
no,
at large?
No, we're not.
Yeah, looking for volunteers or anything like that to
actually,
help
the members are our volunteer corps. Yeah. But that makes our fundraising particularly tricky because, you know, lots of people like to give where they're involved as a volunteer. And we don't have a lot of volunteer openings, but we do get a very, very substantial amount of community support.
We've less than a minute left. What is the way people can get in touch with you if they'd like to become a part of it one way or the other? How do they get to you?
They can go to our website, www.independencecenter.org, and connect there, and there are lots of different ways in which we can get into dialogue.
Is there any kind of a screening process that people have to go through?
Oh, yeah. We do have an intake process because we need to know that the diagnosis is appropriate for, you know, our service population.
We will put that information, your website link, on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Mike Keller, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on what you've done and on your new life that
thank
you will
you.
Embark upon in just a couple of months. And Chris Hample, thank you for being with us and
thank
telling
you.
Us your story. And good luck to you as you move forward. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Kim Oswald, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis On the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. Have a nice holiday. I'm Don Marsh.